Welcome back to the podcast, Hannah. Cheers.
Cheers.
You have a bug in the bottom of your cup.
And you have a lukewarm, pretty much drinking McDonald's Diet Coke.
Love drinking McDonald's Diet right. Coke. Good to have you all back on the podcast. It's time for the Hedge Knight part 3. And we've just finished the reading for it, so it's super fresh in my mind. I had a couple paragraphs I wanted to start with, but the first thing that just came to my mind was, do you want to talk about Steely Pate?
Okay.
I can't wait, apparently.
I finally
we'll get
it.
To the reading.
I get it. I'm so glad.
Tell me more.
This chapter gave me whiplash, kind of, because I was feeling so down for the majority of the chapter. And then Steely Pate comes in at the very end with just, my heart was going to burst into a million pieces.
Mm-hmm.
All these people are congratulating, or not congratulating Dunk, but they're like, you got this. Maidens are kissing him.
Steely Pate. That's how you know it's good.
Yeah. Steely Pate has his armor fixed up and he only asks, or not his armor, his shield, mm-hmm. only asks for a copper for you.
For you?
My boy,
a
Dunk.
A copper. Do you remember how he was to Dunk before all that?
Yes. And then Dunk's like, what is this all about? This is for me. What am I to them? A knight who remembered his vows, the smith said. I wanted to stand up and start screaming.
Do you have it saved how George describes what exactly happens to Dunk when he's walking through there?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you have it up in your book.
I've got it highlighted. Page 92 of my version, if anyone wants to read along. The rain had all but stopped for the first wane light suffused. The rain had all but stopped as the first wane light suffused the eastern sky, but it had done its work. Lord Ashford's men had removed the barriers, and the tourney field was one great morass of gray-brown mud and torn grass. Tendrils of fog were writhing along the ground like pale white snakes as Dunk made his way back toward the lists. Steely Pate walked with him. The vibes. The viewing stand had already begun to fill. The lords and ladies...
He's shirtless, by the way. Sorry.
Who? Which
one? Steely Pate at this point is shirtless.
Less interesting. The viewing stand had already begun to fill, the lords and ladies clutching their cloaks tight about them against the morning chill. Small folk were drifting towards the field as well, and hundreds of them already stood along the fence. So many come to see me die, thought Dunk bitterly, but he wronged them. A few steps farther on, a woman called out, "Good fortune to you!" And an old man stepped up to take his hand and say, "May the gods give you strength, sir." Then a begging brother in a tattered brown robe said a blessing on his sword, and a maiden kissed his cheek. "They're for me." "Why?" he asked Pate. "What am I to them?" A knight who remembered his vows, the smith said.
That's incredible. Where we stopped the reading for this episode today, by the way, folks.
An incredible place to stop. Because I was reading, I was like, is this where I need to end? You're like, why don't you read another paragraph more? Wow, it changed the vibe of the whole reading. Mm-hmm. What a fun chapter.
Yeah, I really like Steely Pate now. I think what I've really pulled out of it the most, and I don't know why people stick to certain things. Obviously, this was teed up to be an emotional moment in the book, but I don't know if everyone reads this and feels the same way. Maybe they do, but I know that it's really stuck out to me, his mm-hmm. relationship with that armor, the simplicity of that armor's approach to life, his little table that swings down when Dunk first goes back into his shop. It just hinges off of the wall, and now it's here. And this is something that he can move around also. So his approach to double knitting all of the chainmail together and creating things that aren't enameled, but things that work really well. A good approach to utility, the kind of utility that is described in this chapter, where a day like today, overcast and stormy, is a great day for hedge knights because the brilliance of everyone's fancy armor is less obvious, less noticeable. Also, people's spirits are dipped. That wasn't really mentioned, but people's spirits are dipped when it's less of a pretty bright summer day. And they can stick out a little bit more through the pageantry that he sort of encapsulates that whole thing. And it must have been a normal situation for him when Dunk first arrived at his stall and was pilfering around his goods and asking him to give him money for mm-hmm. his old stuff.
Right, right.
So he could buy this dude's work or perhaps even have him work for him extra there on the spot and be expected to turn it around within a day.
Right,
because
this guy's
the tourney's starting.
This guy's probably had a dozen other people through
Fossoy's.
His doors.
Imagine Stefan Fossoy comes up there and he's how Stefan Fossoy is and he's talking down to Pate. And that's what he's been dealing with. Mm-hmm. But for his vibe to shift so completely, we stopped our reading last when the encounter happened with Arion. And we didn't get exposure to how many people there at the tourney we're exposed to the actual events that took place. But the way that we end the chapter here, because we start in a cell, Dunk doesn't know what's going on. The way that we end the chapter shows that it's made a pretty severe impact. And I'm assuming that more than just people at the tournament are talking about this. It hasn't been mentioned yet, but I think it's probably made its way through hearsay outside of this event as well, because that's a pretty big deal. We don't think it's a big deal because we're reading a book, and we have to remember that this is an offense that's serious enough to potentially have his hand cut off,
his head cut off, his foot.
If you would have headbutt him, for sure. I think it's so funny. Any the offending thing that hit the royal skin is the thing that gets cut off. But that's what happens. Something serious enough for that big of an offense to happen, but not just serious enough like he hurt someone in nobility, and not just so serious that that noble happens to be of the royal blood, the people that run everything, but serious enough for everyone to care this much. And it represents so much more than the act itself. And that little piece of rebellion represents so much more than the violence that was caused. It's such a big thing. And when we're reading it, especially through Dunk's POV, it's just not that big of a deal. And like I said, when you're reading a book, I think oftentimes we don't really, at least in a lot of fantasy that I read, not the full impact of the scale of the conflict is really that expressed. You know, we were talking the other day about how funny it is that so much of the dialogue and so much of the story itself is based around people in this genre that are the most fated ones in the land.
Oh, yeah. We were like, what if we read a book about some
people that lived in the Riverlands?
Yeah.
Where were you? Okay, you set up, we'll get back, but you set up this, you're like, yeah, he's going to lose his wife.
Well, I was just saying,
I was like, what?
Because we were talking about people who are fated. I feel like we understand where their storyline is going to go, mm-hmm. because they have this. The weight of the world is on their shoulders, and the gods chose them to go through this.
So it's easy
situation.
To write a story around
yeah,
it,
so
or it's easy for us to care
about
it. Will
they, won't they? Is he going to win the big battle? Well, probably, because he's the one.
And if he doesn't, then really bad stuff will happen, because the guy fighting him is the worst bad guy that there is.
Right.
So it kind of writes itself as long as you have the map in front of you.
But I was saying, imagine like a family drama out in the Riverlands where this guy is having trouble with his wife,
right.
and it truly is some suspenseful back and forth, because who knows if he's gonna make it out with a girlie or not.
Right. And you said they lived within like a short horse ride away from an inn.
Yeah. Anyway,
so they're right on the outskirts.
That's the kind of stuff I like. Yeah.
And something happened. We didn't get far enough into deciding what really happened.
But fate hasn't been decided for them, you know? They take matters into their own hands.
Are we talking about the book or this fake story?
This fake story.
Yeah, no.
If anyone needs some
ideas.
It
hasn't been written yet, but I can see where they live. I can see the house. I can see the broken wagon wheel, perhaps, laid against the side of the house.
Well, I feel like...
No kids, right?
Oh, no.
No kids.
But they're older. Yeah.
Yeah.
They never had kids.
Yeah. Oh, so. You said that they lived close enough to the inn where he could take a lady out every once in a while.
But that's... Okay. That's what's so fun about this world. And I feel like as we've been reading this story, I'm so much more inspired by the randos.
Restaurants?
You know? Not restaurants necessarily, but Dunk is truly a... I mean, okay, not so much in this chapter, because we get the reminder of the dream. Prince Darien was
Daeron.
Like... Daeron, sorry.
Yeah.
Was like, I dreamed of you. And Dunk's like, okay... And he was, Darren
so this
says,
is a funny line.
Darren says, my dreams are not like yours, Sir Duncan. Mine are true. They frighten me. You frighten me. Okay, so maybe Dunk is a fated character, you know? And maybe he's got a bigger thing if he's showing up in a royal's dreams.
Mm-hmm.
But leading up to that point, he's just a guy who is just trying to win one battle. And that thought was echoing through my mind this whole chapter, because Dunk has been saying for... Not weeks, but we've been reading it for weeks. All I have to do is win one fight. I just have to win one battle.
I mean, like a plus 500 silver margin on top of my initial investment into getting into the tourney. I just need to walk out with a little bit more money so I can make it to the next one.
Little did he know that this was going to be his one fight, was going to be the fight for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fun to be playing around with people who are just thinking normal things and doing normal stuff and going normal places. And at the beginning of the chapter, he's thinking to himself, man, he's so nostalgic for the time he's had so far at the tourney. Man, me and Egg would be right at the front of the line today. And maybe I'd be standing behind him. Will he be sitting on the railing? And he's thinking about all these people he may not ever see again. And he's just a guy who, as we talked about the very first episode in the first chapter, has this kind of rose-colored glasses view of the world, and not in a negative way, but in a way that is really inspiring. Like, he has such a spirit about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting to follow his narrative mixed up now with the most fated family in Westeros, but we're not seeing it from Egg's perspective. We're seeing it from Dunk, the hedge knight who doesn't have a family.
Yeah, we get to feel his transition from that point of view we were talking about, where you don't quite know the scale of the conflict when you get involved with it, because the stakes for you haven't been that high historically. But now we're seeing the transition from stakes meaning survival, but not too serious of survival, to this, which is
the fulfilling of a prophecy.
The fulfilling of a prophecy, or getting limbs cut off.
Right.
Extremities sliced off your body, which when you're living like he's living, that's an end to it.
He said,
go on.
I think we're probably going to say the same thing, but he said he'd rather die
as a knight
instead of running away as an outlaw.
Yeah.
So.
But it'd be tough to be a knight that was punished and to still try to be a knight with one foot and one hand. You know? Like, he's really big, but imagine that healing process.
That's the end of your career.
With their maesters.
And he's hoping to use this as a springboard to become an even more respected and truer knight. But I don't know if you can get much more of a truer knight than a knight who remembers his vows and is being hyped up by everybody.
The most judgmental person there.
Yeah.
By the most judgmental person that has the things about him where you would respect his point of view. You wouldn't necessarily respect, like, I think it goes Arion and then Maekar. And then, I'm not sure, they're the only ones that you really wouldn't care about their opinions right now, the Targaryens that are there. You wouldn't care about their opinions, but obviously Egg likes them, but Egg's a kid. And we got a lot of good feels from the fact that Baelor took well to him. And in this chapter, Baelor still, after what he did to a Targaryen, being as kind to him as he was, the fact that he was more angry about Egg lying to Dunk rather than what Dunk did said a lot. So we get that. But we also have this sort of holy aspect attached to Baelor, not only in his namesake, but just the fact that he's been above everything, you know, from the very beginning. And the fact that he didn't take it as a slight that someone like Dunk wanted to join the tourney, even though no one would quite vouch for the fact that the guy who knighted him was actually a knight himself. And that might have been from a combinator of the guy who knighted Sir Arlen being another hedge knight style of person himself too. So it's like, how valid really are you to be here? And as we know from this chapter, he doesn't know how well Dunk can fight at all either, but he was still above it all. So it means a little less. So the reason why I brought up Pay at the beginning of this episode is because that guy was a very unlikely cohort. You see that kind of character in a lot of stories. You feel that kind of character in real life sometimes. And something really big has got to happen. And the words that came to my mind after that exchange, where I could tell it was turning to a place of good like that, after he said that you were a true knight, is that Dunk did it. Like, he did it. The universe set him with some kind of puzzle. And if it's Groundhog Day, he did the thing that he needed to unlock the most judgmental dude at the tournament. Him being really useful to your cause aside, having utmost respect for you in the most honest, the most heartfelt way that Pate could express it himself. That's the most he could do to anyone. We remember how we met him the first time. This is a big change and a huge improvement, and probably as sweet as this guy gets. And Dunk unlocks it within a day, basically. Mm-hmm. So like I said, if this is his Groundhog Day, this is a dangerous path to go down, but at least someone that you think is cool, or someone that is obviously really smart and down to earth, feels the same way about you. It's nice.
It is nice. And that's why it has such a huge impact on me at the end of the chapter, because you look at the picture of him and he's just this gruff looking guy. But it reminds me, as you're talking about that, it reminds me of something at the beginning of our reading when Dunk was kind of thinking back through what had happened. It's hard not to like him after what he did, because he didn't think at all. He just did his natural instincts, which was to protect girls. And he's sitting in the cell and he's thinking to himself, a hedge knight is the truest kind of knight, Dunk, the old man had told him a long, long time ago. Other knights serve the lords who keep them or from whom they hold their lands, but we serve where we will, for men whose causes we believe in. Every knight swears to protect the weak and innocent, but we keep the vow best, I think. Queer how strong that memory had seemed. Dunk had quite forgotten those words, and perhaps the old man had as well toward the end. But just this idea that everybody is coming for him for not being a real knight, and everybody is questioning his, not everybody, but a lot of people are questioning where his, if he's valid, essentially. But at this crucial point, he's got the words of the old man echoing in his head that every knight swears to protect the weak and the innocent, but we keep vows the best. And Dunk showed that by trusting his instincts and jumping into something that even Baylor's like, it's never wise to strike a king's grandson in anger, no matter the cause. He's like, I would have wanted to do the same thing.
And I would have.
But what you did was absolutely nuts. And so I think that it is really cool to see him as this. And I think that this is something that somebody like Steely Pate is going to be able to recognize, and what the common people are recognizing, that this seemingly unsuspecting hedge knight that doesn't belong here, that keeps getting rejected, is the only one who's actually showing the characteristics of what knighthood and all its glory and
what
flowering
the games are
should
actually
be
about.
Yeah.
Well, look at that. Good point. Very true. Yeah. And if Egg were to walk away from his judgment from what he did, the only option is to become a robber knight.
Doesn't sound as glorious.
No.
I would say.
It's the opposite of, it'd be survival only at that point. When he says that he would rather die today than live like that, that self-preservation that is supposed to be built into all of us, almost like a panic-like version whenever things really get bad, gets manifest in the instance. But it's always there, and it creeps into people's decision-making. But it doesn't creep into his right now at all.
Because he's a true Gryffindor. He's got that Gryffindor blood running through his veins.
Or he's not very smart.
I would say the same thing. Those are mutually
exclusive
things.
Depends on how you look at
things.
It.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. Like, those things can be true. Because if there aren't gods above keeping balance, if the seven aren't keeping balance in Westeros, and it is just whatever happens, then he's not very smart by making any of these decisions. Mm-hmm. And it's the goodness of others and the luck of the chance that he ended up making friends with someone like Egg that he, even if he makes the bad decisions, might be able to make it out of this situation, which seems like a really fated combination of things to happen, which makes it kind of evident that there may be seven gods above after all, because mm-hmm. how else could this happen anyway?
Especially when you bring the dreams into, or the dream into mm-hmm. the equation. And it's, as we were saying last time that we saw this guy at the end, at the very beginning, you can't let I dreamed of you in Westeros fall to the wayside. And so he describes his dream as, let me read that actually. I dreamed of you and a dead dragon, you see, a great beast, huge with wings so large they could cover this meadow. It had fallen on top of you, but you were alive and the dragon was dead. Did I kill it? Dunk asks, which is, what a good question to ask. That I could not say, but you were there and so were the dragon, or so was the dragon. We were the masters of dragons once, we Targaryens. Now they all are gone, but we remain. I don't care to die today. The gods alone know why, but I don't. So do me a kindness if you would, and make certain it is my brother Arian that you slay. And so,
talk about not caring about people that are in your family. What does that say about them?
Well, everybody's kind of making fun of this guy. Every single one is like, yeah, you know, Arian kind of sucks, and we all wanted to do this, and we're going to go behind his back. And I'm going to give you some insider info and make sure you have friends on your side. And Egg's going to still be the squire because he signed up to be the squire. He's not going to dog on it now. And Baylor's doing the best he can to at least make Dunk feel like he has some sort of insider information. And we get this visit from Darren saying, I would take it back if I could. I was just kind of trying to save myself.
Isn't it funny how he has no shame when he walks into the tent?
But he's being honest.
He's like, yeah, I know it was messed up.
And you might die because of it, but...
There's no personality like that in the Seven Kingdoms, probably, other than people that are raised at high court.
It makes me like him, because he's like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't even know he was gone, and I had to make up something, and I'm sorry that it was you, because I kind of like you now, but...
I had to do something.
I had to do something.
Come on. How bad can the relationship be with your dad?
It must be pretty bad,
so
apparently.
They're psycho, if you're that scared. Or they care so little about anyone else that it doesn't cross his mind how serious putting that accusation on him is, just to not be scolded or something.
He's a prince. He doesn't have to worry about what's happening with the randos.
Good God. I guess you get, like I said, get that kind of safety whenever you are raised in the castle. You don't really think about anyone else. The world is big as where you live, and you're just like, eh.
Which is exactly why Egg is out here trying to see some stuff.
So that's the story of how Egg got his hair cut. His brother cut his hair, probably in a drunken stupor. Mm-hmm. I don't remember there being any scars on top of Egg's head, so it seems like a successful shaving.
Yeah.
They don't have razors there, though, so it was chop, chop, chopped, and then done well with probably, like, some kind of oil and the edge of an axe. Not the tip of an axe. The edge of a knife. Or the tip of an axe. Yeah, the side of, like, a slicing axe. Mm-hmm. That's it. He wanted to be a squire, wasn't necessarily trying to run from anything, and his brother wasn't also trying to run from anything either. He was just trying to separate from the pack and his older brother and his dad long enough to where he wouldn't show up on time, or maybe even at all, to enter the list.
I think he could just vibe and live his own life for a couple of days, because everyone's attention is elsewhere.
While he's having prophetic dreams.
Yes.
So his dad, Makar, is willing... Again, same energy as his son. He's willing to listen to a fake story and chop off someone's hand or foot or execute them or put them in a battle that they can't win just to continue to uphold the rep of his son that he can now count on. He can't, it says, it's either Baelor or Egg that says he can't count on Daeron to be someone that he, is proud of. So all my chips are in Arion's basket, the guy who used to sneak into Egg's bedchamber with a knife between his legs and threaten to turn him into a girl. And also, if he did, that he might marry him. Getting a lot of Euron vibes there. There's always some kind of like weird sexuality attached to the very edge of a bad guy deep down. And I feel like when you're a kid, that's a version of deep down. Because inhibitions are dropped and you don't have a lot of power to make a lot of decisions. And so your world is even smaller than the castle. It's like the few bedrooms that everyone's connected to. And so when your world's only so big, those weird instincts are taking over. And he's like, this is a thing that I want to do. And obviously, if that's what's in your head and you truly don't care about anyone else's feelings, you're going to reveal how shitty you are from a really young age. But he's the dad's favorite right now,
right.
And all that stuff doesn't matter. And who knows what dad has heard about.
It almost doesn't matter what he's heard about. Because remember at some point, Dunk's like, well, somebody's going to tell him the truth. Or there was some exchange about, this isn't real.
Egg could tell him the truth, is what Baelor says.
And
but
Baelor's like, doesn't matter.
To the other sons. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And so... for that to be the reality, he must be having some conflict with other highborn Targaryens, other Targaryens within the royal bloodline, some kind of inner competition. Because what else could make you want to be so hardcore about not bending to the will of the reality of the situation unless there was some bigger fight to fight? And there's no bigger fight than against other Targaryens at this point.
Or because everybody... so. Seemingly is rallying behind Dunk. There was a lot of, like we were saying at the beginning, a lot of people heard about this and they saw this and it's...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And so he's just trying to save face potentially.
To the small folk, to not just the inner conflict between Targaryens. Like he's not trying to make sure that his son is strong for some kind of bloodline. It's just, it's overall reputation.
It may be a mixture of both, but I do think that what Dunk did was from a black and white perspective is pretty messed up. Like he assaulted a royal.
Yeah, he just acted in the moment.
It doesn't matter
without perspective
how or why.
Of the story. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I can see it as primarily being driven by just trying to put Dunk up for the consequences.
Throw the book at him.
Yeah.
So other people don't get ideas. Yeah. Like, we are different people. We are separate.
Because
from
the, but the damage has already been done because everybody
saw it.
Saw it.
And is congratulating.
And they already don't like that
and
guy.
And they're going to do this trial in front of all these people, take up time from the tournament. What a bad idea. They should, if they were really thinking about all of it correctly, then they would have settled it in that Lord Ashford's Solar. Got it taken care of there, not hurt anyone, so there'd be no story about what happened to the guy. Don't make a martyr out of him, and definitely don't make a spectacle about the potential martyrdom. I thought that they were smart. So really all it does is create a situation where the rebellion against the Targaryens, you know, starts from a small trickle and turns into a breach in the dam.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially, it seems like Prince Arryn is the one who's not smart, though, because he's pushing the momentum forward by requesting
because he's afraid
a
to
trial
fight.
By seven.
He's afraid to fight Dunk one-on-one.
Yeah, and he's like, are you afraid to face the Hedge Knight alone and let the gods decide the truth of the accusations?
No!
I want to give my brother a chance to face the man who beat him.
Yeah.
This is about justice. Yeah. This is not about my inability to fight. And so then forcing it to be.
Oh, no, you don't have to do that. Yeah. I would much prefer to sit on the side. The only thing I hate more than horses are
forcing it to be an even bigger spectacle than it already was, I feel like, is quite the wrong move, I would say.
I haven't thought about that yet through any of my read-throughs, that the Targaryens were making such a big mistake if what they were trying to do is keep the small folk held in some way. It's like giving an official audience to the High Sparrow, just further legitimizing the whole thing. I mean, I guess at a certain point, they get loud enough that you can't avoid them. Mm-hmm. So there's something to be said about early acknowledgement, but I don't know, early acknowledgement, avoiding them till the very end. It's inevitable either way.
Tie Dunk up to a tree and let people make fun of him for the whole tourney and then let it go, you know?
Are they going to make fun of him, though?
No.
I think he did a good thing.
Well, especially,
they would turn on him, though, at a certain point.
They would, for they sure, would. If he was being humiliated, but especially if he wins, you know? I can't get too hyped on this idea, but mm-hmm. I loved the response of, so Dunk has this conversation. He's like, what's a trial by the seven? They're like, stop being an idiot. And he's like, I actually really don't know what it is.
When he first said that, Baelor shifts uncomfortably in his seat. And I'm like, man, I've been in that situation so many times, but I've been the Dunk in that situation.
Right.
Very rarely have I shifted uncomfortably in my seat.
So he gets humiliated because he doesn't even know what he's up against. And then he's walking home in the rain and everything feels horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking about how he's not even going to be with a woman before he dies and how sad that is.
Soft moaning from a tent.
And it's just the vibes are down for him. But then he runs into his boys and we get Sir whatever Fossaway.
Stefan and Raymond. Sir Stefan and then Raymond.
Raymond's cousin.
That he likes though, yeah.
Who's like, who are we fighting? And what are we doing? Because we have your back and it's our time to shine. And Raymond's like, I wouldn't really trust this guy because he's just trying to get some of his own. Which, sure, based on what we've seen so far. But
all of a sudden
still,
he likes you?
Yeah,
that's the guy who tried to fight him in the yard originally.
Still, it made me feel good. That Dunk has some, even if they're trying to do it for themselves,
for the wrong reasons.
It doesn't matter because during that walk, Dunk is feeling so alone. He
Can
says,
I read that?
Yeah, please.
Dunk had never felt so alone as he did when he walked out the gates of Ashford Castle, and heard the portcullis rattle down behind him. A soft rain was falling, light as dew on his skin, and yet he shivered at the touch of it. Across the river, colored rings haloed the scant few pavilions where fire still burned. The night was half gone, he guessed. Dawn would be on him in a few hours, and with dawn comes death. And then hope from the Fossaways.
He sees the apple banner crumpled.
And it's two horses.
And it's two horses. He's like, I know this sound from anywhere.
So they slightly do have his back. I just want to give a shout out to Stefan's apple clasp for his cloak. It was red garnets with gold. I mean, come on. They got to have some money. There's not some garnets hanging around where the Fossaways live. Get out of here.
I was excited.
About what?
That they came to his aid. That they're his boys, you know?
What do you think about Raymond telling Dunk that he better get his own set of champions? Because Stefan promised him the who's who. If you remember, the Laughing Storm is in there.
Right,
Otho Bracken.
Right. Raymond's like, I don't even know if Stefan knows those guys.
Yeah, no, he's like, he knows them, but I don't know if they know him.
Yeah, which I thought was really funny. And so we have Raymond and Egg promise to go rally some troops. I feel like Dunk has no one. Dunk has zero. And so I think that anybody that we can get in his corner is going to be a win. And I'm sure that it's going to be an easy cause for all these guys to get some folks rallied behind him. So maybe he's going to have the pick of some knights that he likes. Maybe he's going to have a choice instead of just trying to scrap together a ragtag group.
It feels
group.
That way after what went down with Pate and the small folk.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's a good thing that all three of these guys are out there talking the cause up, because that means that Dunk has a better chance. But I just loved the exchange. I want to read it. This made me laugh so hard when Sir Stefan first, he says, who else fights with us, Sir Duncan? Dunk spread his hands hopelessly. I know no one else. Well, except Sir Manfred Dondarrion. He wouldn't even vouch that I was a knight. He'll never risk his life for me. Sir Stefan seemed a little perturbed. We need 5 more good men. Fortunately, I have more than 5 friends. Yeah. That made me laugh. I thought that was so awesome. And then he goes to list all these famous guys. I shall go and speak with some of them. They won't be happy at being woken, his cousin objected. Excellent, declared Sir Stefan. If they're angry, they'll fight all the more fiercely. You can rely on me, Sir Duncan. Incredible. That's the kind of energy that we need.
He laughs as he walks away.
Yeah,
though.
Even if we're because he's psyched. Like, finally something exciting is going on. Finally something that we can rally behind. Let's get behind the underdog and take down the guys that nobody likes, you know?
Yeah, no, it seems like that's what's happening.
That's a cause I can get behind. I'm psyched just thinking of this speech.
Makar says, if a cause is just, good men will fight for it.
What? Which felt...
That hurts.
But when he said that, it does hurt. And at the time of it being said, I was like, who's going to fight for Dunk? Sir Duncan the Tall? Not even
Dunk
one...
Dunk is a castle wall?
Yeah. Dunk the Lunk. No one is even going to...
Slow as an Oryx?
Yeah. It's going to be him by himself against 7 people.
So 3 of them Kingsguard?
Yeah.
The best swords in the land.
No. Not now. Now everybody has an excuse to... Get
show
back at these guys
up.
That they don't like.
That's so true. Why would they make this opening for themselves? Talk about over-assessing your station. This isn't right after Aegon's conquest, y'all. You guys don't even have dragons anymore.
But isn't that the whole theme of the Targaryen family when we were reading...
FAB?
Yeah, I mean, it was such a major... narrative piece of the cockiness of this Targaryen family, and the dragons aren't even really there anymore. Like, there's just nothing. They're holding on to this old idea, and I'm sure that some of them are live up to the hype. I'm sure that there's
Baelor does.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like he's good, but they're not particularly powerful. Daeron's magical to some degree, it seems. Whether or not you believe his dreams are real, or if he's really just so drunk that he buys into his own BS. But
what's the difference?
It's funny. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. Depending on who's reading it, I don't know if everyone reads this. And I think there's a lot of people that used to be on Tumblr that would be like, Baelor's boring. He's a good two-shoe nice guy. Yeah. Baelor the boring. Yeah. There's probably tags on Tumblr right now, Baelor the boring.
Listen, Tumblr back then was the Wild West.
I don't believe any. But Wild West
opinions.
Exists, you know?
Yeah.
Can this book brainwash you into feeling good vibes is all I'm saying. Or does it not land for people who are like Jafar from Aladdin?
For sure. And I feel like you and me are the kind of people in particular that are going to really rally behind some idiot who is just out here trying to do his best, and he's not following any of the social cues, but it's not because he's trying to. He's being real.
Yeah,
you and me are like, now that's our guy.
Well, what if the bad guys are being real too?
Well, some of them are, because you know, we look at the Targaryen.
Aerion sounds pretty real.
He's real.
He really wants to suck.
He does.
Yeah,
and he truly does.
But he's messing with other people's agency.
Well,
so he's bad.
Even his own brothers dislike him to the point of wanting him to die.
Right.
So
the point of wanting him to die, not just be embarrassed. They're like, please kill him.
Yeah. So I don't know at this point, obviously, if we're going to get more of an insight into some of the party lines being drawn within that family, but mm-hmm. it's pretty clear to me when Egg shows up, and then I was not expecting Prince Darren at all. That was pretty surprising. I even wrote
the guy from the inn.
Yeah, I remember. Well, I remember the guy from the inn. I wrote little exclamation points in the book. That's how shocked I was by the situation. So,
Shocked about the prophecy or that he returned,
but
and then
just
walked
all
into
of it,
the Fossaway tent.
All of it.
That was ridiculous.
All of it, because we were just in with the Targaryens getting slaughtered. Like the vibe was so bad that Dunk was going to have to pay the consequences for his actions when he was just trying to protect this person that deserved protecting. And
how about that line where in the beginning of the chapter when Dunk was in his cell, the sound of the lances snapping reminded him of Tonsel's fingers snapping.
I shivered. Ooh, I did not like that.
Yeah.
It was a... Ugh. I'm pumped for this little ragtag squad that we've got together. And the fact that Egg came back, he's like, I'm your squire
after all.
That's just
the fact that
is.
He's allowed to, that Baelor is consenting to this, even though his father and his brothers are riding in the different
against
group.
Him.
Yeah, that's, it's almost like it doesn't matter. It's
and
like a little pageantry to the Targaryens.
Exactly.
So if Dunk dies, he dies. And of course they expect him to die. He's got three of the Kingsguard on his side and he has no challengers to help him.
He's expected to die, but at the same time, everybody's treating him like he could potentially have a chance.
Well, he's big.
Darren, Baelor, all of them are being pretty upfront with him.
Yeah, but people do that when it's not their fight and they're not the ones that might get killed. They're like, you can do it. Come on, don't let those people do that to you.
But I don't know. Their tone doesn't seem... Egg is not going to...
Egg's 8 or something like that.
I know he is, but he's... He just has... Maybe it's just because he's one of the main characters, but he just has this vibe about him that I feel like he's way smarter than just some 8-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
He picks up on way more subtleties that are going on. So I don't know.
For sure.
Maybe everybody assumes that Dunk is going to die and I'm just like really bought into and hyped up on the situation. But I guess I was just surprised and happy that Darren comes in and has such a frank conversation with him when he really doesn't have to.
Don't mean to put you on the spot. Just tell me what your opinion is. What do you think this prophecy means? My dreams are not like yours, Sir Duncan. Mine are true. They frighten me. I dreamed of you and a dead dragon, you see, a great beast, huge with wings so large they could cover this meadow. It had fallen on top of you, but you were alive and the dragon was dead.
So it seems like Dunk doesn't come out of this unscathed, but that he could win.
So you think the prophecy is about this?
Well, it seems like that's how everybody's interpreting it as. And if what else is Dunk going to be dreamed about? And what other opportunity is going to come up against a dragon other than this point? And look,
there are a lot of dragons here.
Look how thick the book is, unfortunately, that if it's not about this moment in particular, then this moment in particular is a precursor to whatever he is meant to be doing down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's now because he's tied in with the Targaryen family and he and Aegon are going to continue their journey together and whatever that may mean, maybe this is a greater storyline down the road, or this is the fated beginning of Sir Duncan the Tall becoming one of the greatest knights in the Seven Kingdoms.
Right on.
From there, we get to see the painted shield, which I wish that there was a picture of it in here because the way it's described is a stunner. His girl's gone and all he has left is this beautifully painted shield. He has a second guess to himself. He's like, why did I pick a falling star as my sigil? But
I can read it.
Please.
Your rim was old, cheap steel, brittle, and rusted. There's so much truth buried within these words. I've made you a new one, twice as thick, and put some bands across the back. Fortification. I'm adding a little, my own italic asides into this, by the way. It will be heavier now. Oh, yeah, it will be heavier now, but stronger too. There's something about it being heavier and stronger.
It's like your new laptop.
It's true. It literally is. The girl did the paint. I should have stayed. This is after he looks at the way it looks. I should have stayed with the chalice, he said miserably. It had wings, at least, to fly away. And Sir Arlen said the cup was full of faith and fellowship and good things to drink. This shield is all painted up like death. And here's paint again. This total shift from the guy that we met originally. The elm's alive, Pate pointed out. See how green the leaves are? He's an artist. Summer leaves, for certain, and I've seen shields blazoned with skulls and wolves and ravens, even hanged men and bloody heads. They served well enough, and so will this. You know that old shield rhyme? Oak and iron, guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell. Dunk finishes. And then he finds out how much it is. One copper. That's the lowest amount of money that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it. And now he has new gear. And they took all of his money, too, and they didn't give it back to him, which is messed up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The heck?
That is messed up.
But it seems like his horses are at least bought back by someone that he likes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe likes him back a little bit. So
he's got his
animal husbandry points for this chapter. A+.
I know. We've been
paying attention to stuff like that. I want to know what the horses are up to. I want to know what old Chestnut's doing.
For sure.
Can't just get rid of him. Build a pony from Lord of the Rings.
I'm just thinking about, because I'm playing through Final Fantasy IX. So it's like, you gotta up your gear
it's exactly
before you
that.
Go into the,
exactly,
the boss
no,
battle.
Exactly that. And that's one thing I love about George's books is his attention to detail to that. But the way that he does it is interesting to me. I've talked about it before years ago. Dragonheart bows, obsidian, the different ores and things like dragonbone. Like he touches on these aesthetics that are present in all. A game has to have it, and it's a great system for them to itemize so there's some kind of progression. But all it is ones and zeros in the background. It's just a way to make it seem like there's a progress system in a game or something. But it's a really convenient progress system because within that gear and stuff, there's a way to describe the world around you.
Uh-huh,
how
exactly.
Gathering certain things are better than certain things, how certain things work better than certain things. And if you can have a story that's interesting and cool, but you can also continue to prove how real the world is around you by there's rules and certain things work together better than others, that's really cool. And I think that just touching on it, I always describe it as like, just giving it a vignette and not going too deep into the detail gives us a little bit more ownership over the way that it is in our mind rather than really harping on the way that oars or the way that a certain sword is sharpened gives us a little bit more of the ability to access it at our own level of interest and stuff like that. So you're talking about the way that your interest is now based on thinking about gear from another thing. Mine's different from that, but we all understand how if you put steel in a certain pattern that it might fortify it. And if we're paying attention, we might notice how it might be heavier, but it will be stronger. So there's always a cost associated with some kind of change or improvement. And if it was lighter, it would protect you less. And if there were enameled dragons on the outside of your helm, you'd be fighting for the Targaryens.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
Or an axe might catch them. But if you have a helmet that's swooped, your axe might glance off the side. But you have to make friends with somebody that can make a swooped helmet, too.
Or find one in a chest somewhere.
Or find one in a chest somewhere. Or kill a guy on the side of the road and take all of his stuff.
Uh-huh.
They're living in a time where if you kill someone, there's not like a bank or credit cards or inheritance or some like CDs they have their money put back in that you have to access to take all their shit. They probably have it on them and you can just take all of it. And that's literally how this tournament works. Anyway, I'm liking it. I like the aesthetic of this time and it's less grand than being in the Great Pyramid Marine.
Mm-hmm.
But the interpersonal relationship stuff is kind of like the thing we described at the beginning of the episode where there's this family living in the Riverlands and their conflict is different than Messiah's conflict versus an undead army. So we have to access different emotions, but we're navigating the same universe.
Same and human complex. Using
exactly the same truths that exist in that universe, but in different ways. So getting different feelings from that. So what do you think is going to happen?
Man. Well, like I was saying, I feel so much better at the end of the chapter than I did at the beginning of the chapter for Dunk's outcome. And based on this little dream, based on Egg, based on Steely Pates hyping him up, I think that Dunk comes out the other side, if not the victor, alive with points with the common folk or points with the Targaryens. I'm not 100% sure. I don't think he's going to kill Aerion. Like, I feel like that's pretty wild. But I do think that he's going to come out the other side with some great benefits to his journey. And
this is based off the thickness of the book, right?
Well, it's based off the thickness of the book.
And all the other stuff you said that I conveniently forgot.
But like I was saying as I was reading this piece of the chapter, how consistently Dunk has been saying, all I need to do is fight one battle. I just need to win one battle. And so those things may not be connected for real, but in my brain, it's like, well, this is the one battle that he needed to win to become a knight. That's all he needed. And so
just fighting the who's
the opportunity who, is here and this is it. So I feel optimistic about how this is going to go for him, but I'm not sure if he's going to kill him. I just think that something is going to happen, obviously, in Dunk's favor. That's kind of a cop-out, but I think our next chunk of this is the end of of this. So,
yeah, the next episode we're going to do is for the final part of The Hedge Knight. And so we will find the answers to your questions.
I just want to give another shout-out to Sir Stefan saying he has more than five friends. That was so funny. I loved every second of that. I'm going to give my own to the piece of the conversation between Baelor and Dunk when he says to him at the beginning of the conversation. I'm going to read two parts. Baelor Breakspear studied Dunk's eggs. Dunk's eggs. Let me start over. Baelor Breakspear studied Dunk's eyes for a long moment. Sir Duncan, let me ask you this. How good a knight are you truly?
Oh, yeah.
How skilled at arms?
You ask him again later. So I say,
exactly.
How good of a knight
are
you? So
they have this whole conversation about what Dunk's options are, and he lays them out for him. You have another choice, though, Prince Baelor said quietly. Whether it is a better choice or a worse one, I cannot say. But I remind you that any knight accused of a crime has the right to demand trial by combat. So I ask you once again, Sir Duncan the Tall, how good a knight are you, truly? That's like the end of it's like I'm imagining a trailer in my mind and you hear a voice in the background that says, how good of a knight are you, truly? Cut to all these crazy fight scenes. Yeah. That's what was going on in my mind. So own to that conversation and own to how good of a knight Dunk is. We don't know.
Nice. I'm going to give my own to the sunlight shining off of armor, creating a different vibe. I'll read it. The overcast day wouldn't glisten on the noble finery like it does when it's sunny, but it's good for hedge knights. It's a feeling that I definitely notice and feel the effects of, whether it's better people and the vibe accentuating the differences in everyone and how maybe worse circumstances equalize folks more. And that has a whole spectrum of expression. Sometimes it's at a public pool at a hotel. Sometimes it's at a tourney like this. It could be anything. But to be aware of that and then to write it into a story at this point, to have that rattling around in your head, it's so interesting to me. I think that's it's really cool that that's put down on paper somewhere. Because I don't think I've read that particular way to describe that truth that we all feel. A way to describe a vibe. And how a vibe can be broken down like that, I thought was really cool. But my real own is going to go to Steely Pate in general and his relationship with Dunk and how it's changed and how first impressions can be wrong for both of them and probably for all of us when we read it too.
It was awesome. What a great stretch of pages.
And now we are going to read owns from the internet. It's time for owns from the internet. Twitter.com renamed to X. What's that about? Also, Instagram, still the same name for now. Maybe they'll copy that from Twitter, too. Hannah?
I got distracted because I sent you an unbelievable TikTok right after I sent you all the owns. First, we've got Seth knows elections are. Then it's cut off. Sorry, at Seth. Owned the Ashford Masons taunting prisoners with cruel window placement.
I hate a good cruel window placement. From at Ghost Chase Killa, owned to Raymond Fossway for being a real G, but his cousin can suck it. Go Green Apples. Hannah's like, I will fight you for that point of view. Stefan's cool.
Shout out to Eric at Coach Pritch, who says, I read A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms before I watched or read any of A Song of Ice and Fire, which, that's a pretty interesting point of view.
So it came out while all the hype was happening, and he was like, this is the new book. I'm going to read the new book. That's
Eric,
neat.
Let us know what that was like for you.
Yeah, please tell us.
And now over on Instagram, Sixes and Sevens PT says, my own goes to Harry Lloyd's perfect narration of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Harry Lloyd's, two episodes in a row, you get the shout out. Mrs. Duncan the Tall, who is, this is their moment as we do Duncan Egg on the podcast, writes, Owen to Baylor Breakspear, the goat, just for being born, period. Crying emoji, two hearts emojis. We asked Mrs. Duncan the Tall for further clarification on an own that they sent on our last episode. I have that clarification for all of you. I need to just find, here we go. I love the story. I knew I wanted to marry him the moment I finished the book. Mind you, I love reading, but I don't get crushes anywhere near this magnitude. I love getting first reading impressions of people. I have made everyone around me read it, including my 11-year-old son.
Good.
The story is such a big part of my persona, and I have a very special place in my heart for it. I'm just so excited about all the love it's getting lately. And of course, I lost my shit when I learned about the announcement. Talking about it being potentially adapted to a live action series on HBO as a successor show. Dunk is such a teen with his first paycheck. It's LOLs. His big spending is on food. He's so precious. His idealistic thoughts that he'd for sure win at least once. It's literally a teen thinking that they're going to get their dream car on minimum wage in the first week at their fast food job. I love your inferences about Dunk waiting on day two to weed out some contenders. Never thought about him as low-key cheating, but it wouldn't be the first time he technically lies. Also, I never realized that his first connection with Baylor wasn't because he was nice, but also because he's the only person he can talk about Sir Arlen about. Poor Dunk is grieving. I agree, it's going to be hella hard to cast Dunk as much of his communication as inner dialogue. I love the little nugget Zach is leaving for Hannah. Shush face. My own regarding the hound was about Dunk threatening to get hounds to chase Egg even if he didn't have any. How can we miss that?
Okay.
It's in the first day Dunk left Egg at camp alone. That's pretty much the exact vibe of what Owens were originally, so I don't know how I missed that. Oh my god, Ham, please listen to Harry Lloyd. It's like butter to our ears. Your eps made me so happy. I'm a training coach for Texas Roadhouse, and we were at the middle of a new store opening, and I couldn't wait to get free time to listen. Keep reading. I'm your biggest cheerleader. And 10 heart emojis. Thank you.
I love Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah, you do.
I've been talking about it for weeks.
You love Texas Roadhouse.
Thank you, Mrs. Duncan the Tall. And thank you, everybody who's been sending in your owns. Shout out to people who've been sending us mild spoilers. We'll read your owns later.
Oh, yeah, there's more that we can read, but they're...
We'll read them later.
Yeah, I can't read them now because we're not at the tournament yet. So those will get read, but also now you can send us owns for the entirety of the Hedge Night.
Mm-hmm. So please
starting
do.
Starting now. And we won't let Hannah read them until we are actually about to record. So she can check Instagram. But we're going to need a story or two.
So you can do that on Instagram, on Twitter, or whatever we're supposed to call it, by searching for at Game of Owns.
I have nothing to cheers you with, but Hannah, cheers to
cheers
finishing the book and getting on to the next ones. We'll see you all on the next podcast.
I can't wait to finish reading it. So we'll be recording again really soon. Send us owns.
Looking forward to it.
Hit us up on Instagram.